It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. What a pleasure to have culinary explorer and Minneapolis master chef and restaurateur Yia Vang is here. He uses food to tell stories, believes every dish has a narrative. He hosts the Outdoor Channel's food series called Feral. We'll get into that. Call in about Hmong food, culture, and cooking, 800-642-1234. Yia Vang is a James Beard-nominated chef with roots in central Wisconsin, owns the restaurant Union Hmong Kitchen in Minneapolis. Chef Yia Vang, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, Kate. Thank you so much. So excited. Wisconsin boy, so I'm excited to be on here.
Oh my gosh, we relish you hearing that. You know, you were raised in central Wisconsin. What were family dinners like growing up?
Man, you know, growing up, mom worked second shift, dad worked first. So family dinners most of the time was, my mom giving instructions to us the day before, or, you know, the night before she leaves. And then dad would come home. And he loved watching the news, but he didn't understand English. So he would watch Peter Jennings, Dan Rather. My brother would be watching with him. My brother would help translate. And then me and a few of my other siblings would be in the kitchen kind of, you know, putting things together.
Your family resettled in Wisconsin. You were born in a Thai refugee camp. What did you enjoy eating during your childhood? How did you gravitate to the kitchen?
Yeah. So, you know, to be completely honest, like growing up, we were this, you know, we were Hmong kids. We lived in this little town called Port Edwards, Wisconsin, right by Wisconsin Rapids. And so we were growing up. I've always just wanted to be like the other kids at school. Right. So we would have, you know, like traditional Hmong food at home. And I would pray every day that my parents would allow us to get Lunchables. I would get the Uncrustable, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
That's
I wanted
horrible.
Bologna, ham and cheese. Like, I go to school and I see my friends with ham and cheese sandwiches. And I'm like, that looks amazing. What is that thing? You know, so grass is always greener, you know, and because growing up, you didn't want to be that kid that brought like the quote unquote stinky food to, you know, school. So you just wanted to be like the other kids. And so, yeah, that's kind of where my childhood was kind of.
I read about how your mother on Sundays would cook noodles after church, a big pot of noodles. What is the meaning in that? What's the secret to a wonderful pot of noodles?
Yeah. So, you know, so we actually went to the small church up in Stevens Point. So it was about almost half an hour away from where we were living. And so after church, you know, all the congregation, you know, there's about 120, 150 of us. The congregation would just literally say, hey, you know, after church, we're just going to have this cauldron of, you know, stock going on, faux broth going on. And then everyone just brought, you know, little pieces, like, you know, somebody would bring the noodles, somebody would bring the meat, somebody would bring the herbs. And then after church, everyone just grabbed the bowl and we just kind of, you know, pho or kabong in the back. And everyone just kind of, it wasn't like one of those things where everyone just set it up and say, hey, this is kind of like a program. It was just like, this is what we did. And growing up with that, there was this sense of community. But, you know, I was at such a young age, I didn't realize that there was a sense of community. I just thought to myself, hey, like, this is kind of what we do. And it wasn't until, you know, as an adult, it really sank to me that this is something really special. This is something that really kind of forged the foundation of, you know, my worldview.
And that is informing your worldview, but also it's informing your cooking today because you've got Slurp opening up.
Yeah, so we opened up. It's a pop-up restaurant. We opened up about 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, and it's amazing. You know, there's this little area. There's this little kitchen where we use it as our commissary kitchen to, you know, make food for all these other food things we're doing. And there's a little dining area, so we decided that, you know, this is kind of what we wanted to do, and we were very blessed to be able to you know, put it on. And, you know, in the last, what, 2-3 weeks now, it's been going very, very well. And, you know, it just hits up here, especially with, you know, weather's dropping to negative 30 at times, you know, big bowl of noodle. Yeah.
Hot noodles, cold weather. You're like, that's a win-win in my chef book.
Oh, yeah. Being Minnesota, Wisconsin, we all know that. And, you know, so we have the people, we have our friends in LA who was like, oh, well, how does that feel like? And I'm like, it feels like a, you know, when you have that warm, warm bowl of noodles after you're done, you know, I tell people it's like getting a hug from the inside out, you know?
Oh, I love how your name means iron skillet or wok. I wonder if your parents you know, knew you would find your way to the kitchen as a chef when they named you.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think a lot of, like, Hmong people who, you know, speak our native language, you know, they kind of, you know, they kind of talk about that. But it's really interesting. I actually, my whole life, I've been trying to get out of it, you know, so I never wanted to do this. I always tell people that, you know, food and, you know, kitchen, working in the kitchen, it found me. I tried to push it away. You know, I went to school at UW La Crosse. I graduated with a degree in interpersonal communication, marketing, and PR. And I never wanted to be in this, you know, in the kitchen world. And I kind of just always pushed it away. It was always like a plan. As I always tell people, it was like plan D or E. You know, it's like if all this failed, I can always cook somewhere, you know. And and eventually 10 years ago, that really changed, you know, my views really changed on food and understanding that food is the ultimate equalizer. And, you know, it is that universal language we use to speak to each other.
Mm. Well, let me reintroduce you here as we lean into plan A, as we talk about Hmong culture and cuisine with Chef Yia Vang, a James Beard nominated chef with Central Wisconsin roots, telling us about his upbringing with food. You can join in along the way. Your questions for the chef, 800-642-1234. So you own Union Hmong Kitchen in Minneapolis. You're about to open another restaurant. How does a restaurant owner stay competitive and at the same time not get burned out?
Yeah, I mean, Kate, if we can answer that question, you win the $1 million prize, you know. we always talk about how there are some areas where you're going to have, there's going to be sacrifices, you know, it's just pure hard work. I think for me, to be very completely honest, like, I've been very blessed to have great friends and family that, you know, when you do these things, there's going to be critiques, going to be people saying their own thing, they're going to have their own views of what you're doing. And I honestly, my center is, you know, my mom and dad, and they're my shoreline, they're my lighthouse. When everything's stormy outside and I can't figure, I can always look, like, you know, it's so funny, yesterday my mom, I haven't been, they live about half an hour away from where I live, and I haven't been back there in the last week. And, you know, my mom actually just called me yesterday, and she does this once in a while. And she's like, hey, you know, and she has this way of saying that she misses me, where she says, you know, your dad is, you know, he really wants some whole fish. So if you go to the fish market, you can bring back some whole fish. And that's kind of her way of saying, just stop by, you know? And yeah, so I, you know, so actually this afternoon, I'm going to go grab some whole fish and go visit them. And, you know, that's just, they all mom and dad really wants is just, I just want 5-10 minutes, come by, say hi. Oh. And that to me is so therapeutic, to drive half an hour out there. So it's about basically an hour drive back and forth, you know, and just get to see them for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. And mom was always, I know you're very busy, I know you have a lot of things going on. But again, also, I just tell people I'm very, very blessed to have a great staff. We have a staff of about 25 people who are incredible operators, who are incredible chefs, you know, and they take care of a lot of details where I can say, hey, I need a little break. And they're like, we got you. So, yeah.
Let's take a call. Kim is joining us from La Crosse. Kim, hi. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I'm so excited to hear the chef on this morning. I am a huge, huge lover of Hmong food, but I'm quite overwhelmed going into our local Hmong grocery stores, and was wondering if the chef could tell me what are some of the basic herb spices that really, you know, for broths and stuff, because I just don't even know where to start.
Kim, thank you. What are the basics that Kim should have in her pantry when she's really embracing this food?
Yeah, so this is what I tell people, you know, when you look at it, when you think about the aromatics that we use, and I'm thinking about stuff that's always constantly in my mom's kitchen, right? So if you're talking about aromatics, it's lemongrass, ginger, shallots, garlic. Those are the four aromatics. If you're starting any stir fry, if you're starting any kind of pho broth, if you're starting any kind of soup or anything, those are the four aromatics that you always have to have. You know, and then you go from there. You know, a lot of Hmong food is very herbaceous, you know, so you have your cilantro, you have your Thai basil, which is different from your regular basil, you know, you have your mint and dill. And those are the four herbs that we always have on hand at the restaurant. You know, we're always using that. And it's just commonly known as our herb mix. You know,
go ahead. Keep going. We're jotting all this down. Lemongrass, ginger, shallots, garlic, cilantro, Thai basil, mint.
So, Yeah. And then to my Wisconsin brothers and sisters, I would say, let's turn up the heat a little bit, you know, get some Thai chilies in there. The thing is, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid, because Thai chilies is different from other chilies. Thai chilies, that the heat is in the back. So what that means is, like, when you put Thai chilies in something and you're eating, right away you're going to be able to taste all the flavors, the sweetness, the, you know, the savory, and then the heat creeps, you know, a little bit, you know, on you. And I kind of call Thai chili like a ninja chili, you know, so you don't realize it and boom, it's just there. But again, when you're adding chilies into any ingredient, any dish, you remember, less is more, right? You start with a little, you add a little more. And then the two, you know, other sauces that have in your pantry all the time, and always put a splash in, is oyster sauce and fish sauce. You know, fish sauce, I tell people, it's kind of like that crazy uncle. You don't want a lot of them at the party, you know, because then it makes the party too overwhelming. But he comes around once a year for Thanksgiving and keeps everything very, very interesting.
I love the storytelling in the food. But what about fish sauce? Because some people, you know, are like, it's okay, but it tastes fishy afterward. What's your advice there?
Absolutely. What I would say is, again, a little goes a long way. You know, like, there's nothing I do that doesn't have fish sauce. For example, when I make chicken noodle soup, I add a dash of fish sauce at the end there. You know, when I do any kind of brothy soup, I always add a dash of fish sauce in there, because it really just, that savory, it just deepens that savoriness. You know, for example, Worcestershire sauce is basically fish sauce, but made in England. That's what it is. So, like, you know, people who love Bloody Mary, I say switch out your Worcestershire and add a little fish sauce in there. If you're making house-made barbecue sauce, add a little fish sauce right there. And again, like I said, start with a splash and then taste. The biggest thing is, I mean, I love recipes, don't get me wrong, but the one thing I tell people is, recipe is a guide. It's not the ultimate end. A recipe is a guide. It gives you guidelines. It's those guardrails. But, you know, but if you like it, like, you know, when people go, well, how much garlic? I said, well, how much garlic do you like? You know, some people's garlic level is different from others. You know, well, how much, you know, peppers, how much heat, what's spicy? Well, that's yours and mine is different. So, yeah, so I tell people, you know, just you put a little in, you taste, you want a little more, taste again.
Kim, thanks so much for the question, the journey on that question with Chef Yia Vang with us on foods and flavors of Hmong culture and bringing the cuisine of South and Eastern Asia to our palates and the Midwest restaurant scene. Join in with your questions about Hmong food or about the Farrell Show and using invasive species in cooking. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have the host of the Outdoor Channel original series called Farrell in Twin Cities, Master Chef Yia Vang, on elevating his Hmong family traditions with cooking and sharing stories through food. Still time to talk about Hmong cooking, ingredients you've wondered about. Call in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Chef Yia Vang stays with us. Let's talk a little bit about Farrell and this work of chasing and harvesting and cooking wild game while cameras follow you. What did you enjoy about working on the series?
Yeah, I mean, Farrell is a really, really cool concept. About 2 years ago, these producers, Intuitive Content Productions, came to me and said, hey, we have this idea. It's kind of a little crazy, but, you know, like, what are your thoughts? And so, you know, I was like, okay, this is, you know, super cool. Let's rock it out. And that's, I loved it, because you go in and it's a fun, fun show. But at the end of the day, the heart of it is conservationist. You know, it's about understanding our ecosystem. It's about that there's an imbalance to the ecosystem. And the reason why some of these animals are here is because of us, is as humans. You know, so, like, for example, we go down to, you know, the Everglades, and it is infested with, you know, Burmese pythons, and it's destroying the ecosystem down there. Well, the reason why is because all these people wanted these pythons, these pets, and then when they got too big, they didn't know what to do, is just throw them outside. And now they've, you know, invaded the Everglades, and they're, you know, so understanding that, looking into that, you know, there, you kind of have this heart for this whole way of saying, how do we bring balance back to our planet? And so, yeah, I mean, that was part of it. But then, you know, yeah, the other part when you're running through the Everglades trying to catch a, you know, a python, and then I got bit by the python, and that was, you know, kind of interesting. And so, yeah, we were, at one point I was like, what am I doing out here?
I thought it was interesting too, that you approach silver carp, as part of the series, because Wisconsin has a silver carp problem and they're invasive and they jump and they hurt boaters and skiers. How do you go about cooking silver carp?
Yeah, so monk families, especially growing up, that was one of the things that we, you know, went fishing for, carp and catfish, you know. And so a lot of times, you know, we would, you could either just, you know, fillet it, and you can, you know, throw it over the fire, grill it, roast it, you know, or you can, again, fillet it, batter it, you know, in cornmeal and deep fry it. And I kid you not, Kate, if you had silver carp the way that we had when we went, and we caught silver carp, if you had that, you would never think that it was carp. It literally tasted like a shore lunch. You know, if you're doing walleye, if you're doing sunny, if you're doing, you know, crappie, that's what it literally tastes like. You know, and just knowing how to treat the meat and just knowing how to, you know, think through it a little bit. And instead of, you know, kind of giving it that bad nomer where it's, oh my gosh, it's a trash fish, it's a trash fish. But again, a lot of people make their living on catching carp. You know, one of the things they do is they take it to this one, they take it to these places where they get, it gets turned into, you know, animal food. It gets turned to dog food, you know, but also it's delicious too. It was, you know, we were doing it and we were deep frying it right on the shore, you know, and it was a little tartar sauce, a little squeeze of lemon, and you would never know.
It changes our thoughts about Friday fish fries, perhaps. Let's take another call. Sarah in Libertyville, Illinois. Sarah, hi.
Hello. I really love lemongrass, and I grew it in my garden this year. I mean, I love the flavor, but this is my first time cooking with it, and I made a Thai pesto with Thai basil and lemongrass and stuff, and like, how can you, is there any way to make the texture just less, it's, you know, what, I don't even know what the word is, just like, it's like really hard. You know what I mean?
Sarah, thank you. Let's get Chef Vang to respond to that. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, the word we always use is it's stocky, you know, it always feels like it's fibrous, you know? So for example, lemongrass, depending on the kind of lemongrass you grow, there's some lemongrass that's made, just for like stocks, you know, and teas. And then there's some lemongrass where it's a little thicker, right? So the outside layer, you have to peel the outside layer. So it's probably about 2 to 3 layers in. Now, what we do at the restaurant is when we peel that outside layer, we actually don't throw that away. We keep all that quote unquote scrap and we use it for our stock and our broth, you know? Now the inside layer is a lot more tender. So I would say when you look at a lemongrass stock, you break it into thirds. You got the top, middle, and then the bottom. Now the top and the bottom is actually a little stockier. It's a little woodsy, you know, it's a little, you know, so that we, a lot of times we use for stock and we use for like, you know, teas and stuff like that. Now the middle section, that's where your sweet spot is. You know, if you think about like, just think about like an artichoke, you know, like you really want to get dig and deep into that, you know, center part where it's a little bit more, it's more tender. And then it's about breaking it down. Like some, a lot of times it's, you know, putting a little oil or a little water in it and throwing it into like a Vitamix and blitz it up, you know, and you almost turn it into a liquid. You know, so it's breaking it down. And then, you know, the thing I tell about people about lemongrass, if you, you know, break the lemongrass, rub it in your hand and you smell it, it smells like Fruit Loops. So.
I love it. Sarah, thank you. We have Chef Yia Vang, James Beard nominated chef with Central Wisconsin roots, fielding your questions. Grant sent along an email and asked, what makes Hmong cuisine different from other Southeast Asian cooking like Thai, like Vietnamese and Burmese?
Absolutely. We get asked that all the time. What's the difference between Hmong cuisine and all these other, you know, Southeast Asian cuisines? And, you know, the thing that I say is this, and this is from the last, you know, few years of us really trying to figure out this answer. And I tell people that Hmong food isn't a type of food. It's a philosophy of food. It's a way of thinking about food. Our cultural DNA, the Hmong people, is intricately woven into the foods that we eat. If you want to know where we've been, you want to know where we are and where we're going, you look at our food. Because as a people group without a state, without a home, without a flag or an anthem, we've always had to constantly be on the move. And as we are on the move, our cultures and other cultures rub shoulders together, and we glean from those cultures and forged it into our own. So, you know, for example, the Hmong people in Wisconsin eat a little different than the Hmong people out in Fresno, California. Why? Because of the produce and the product that we can get in Wisconsin is a little different than the produce and the products that we get out in Fresno, California. The Hmong people of, you know, the Pacific Northeast, Portland, Seattle, they eat different than the Hmong people who live down in Boca Raton, Florida. Why? Because we are people from the land. We are people that are agricultural people that that the land is what grows our food. Now, if you just look at the way that growing seasons are in those two cities, it's different. See, the beautiful thing about Hmong people, and I tell people all the time, especially young Hmong people, when I go speak in high schools and middle schools, is that our people have been survivors. No matter where history puts us, we've survived because we believe that by building one generation and giving ourselves to one generation, that builds a platform for the next generation to go. See, my mom and dad, my grandma and grandpa, they were part of this war in Northern Laos, you know, during the Vietnam War. They were part of this war. My dad fought in that war, in the secret war. He sacrificed himself. He gave everything to get us to this country. Now, then he gives us this mantle and says, hey, our generation has given this. What do you do next with it? That's yours now. And I believe that if you really want to know people, you got to know their food. You know, within our company, within our restaurants, we always talk that. Mm. We always say this, that every dish has a narrative. And if you follow that narrative long enough and close enough, you get to the people behind the food. And once you're there, it's actually not about food. It's about people.
Oh.
The food is a catalyst to cultivating great relationships. So for us to understand each other, we first start with the food.
Yeah,
and so people always say,
I'm so sorry. We're out of time. Thank you for joining us.
No problem.
Yi Vang owns the restaurant Union Hmong Kitchen in Minneapolis. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network.